Welcome back to the Mel K Show. Your favorite guest of mine is back to make a little bit of sense, if you can, of the madness surrounding us. Thank you for joining me, Charlie Robinson.
I make no promises. There's no sense we can make out of this. It's gone off the rails.
It has. And like we always say on the show, your first book is the best reference book, in my opinion, of where we are. That would be The Octopus of Global Control. But you did not mean to write a playbook with your second book, which was The Controlled Demolition of America. And yet here we are. Yeah. And how's it going?
Well, it's fine. It's just that every single day my patience is tested. Right. A little bit further and a little bit further. And I wonder if it's part of a plan. I mean, I wonder if that's sort of the point is like, let's see if we can get these people, you know, let's see if we can really shake them up. The red ants and the black ants in the jar. Let's just shake that jar and just see if they'll fight with each other. You know, it feels like that's kind of what we're being pushed into. Every day I turn on the, you know, I come to my computer, I fire up the, you know, I go and look at Zero Hedge, right, or Gateway Pundit or places like this. And I just go, let's show me what insanity is at Twitter, obviously. And it's laughable, but at the same time, like, there's a segment of society that doesn't even understand, I don't think, what's going on. And I don't know. It feels a bit kind of like hopeless. Like you kind of want to throw your hands up and go, why are we even bothering? Why am I bothering to wake somebody up to what's going on if they're going to tell me that there's 172 different genders? Like that's not a serious person I can have a conversation with. So my circle of people is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I don't want to interact with a lot of people out there. They're definitely dividing this country up along ideological lines, but the lines are so weird. You know, it's like you have to believe
that's what I've been thinking too, is like, what? But you know what, though? You've talked about it in the past. I've talked about it, and I reference it a lot. The Bezmenov interview with G. Edward Griffin. And it does seem that we're in the normalization of insanity phase. I am right now ending my lifelong living in and out of Manhattan and cleaning it up. I'm actually staying because on the 31st, I'm going to go join our friend Frank from Quite Frankly in studio. And that'll be my last hurrah in New York. And then I'm out of here. But I'll tell you right now, New York City right now, all I can say is it feels like it has fallen. Okay. And what people are hearing is not what's on the ground. They're hearing a little bit. But if you walk around, you know, we already had de Blasio disappear with $850 million for the homeless. We had a huge, huge homeless problem here. We still do. It's worse than ever. Now we have about 50,000 illegals walking around the city as well. 50% of the hotel rooms are filled with illegals that, again, aren't paying. I just paid half my income in taxes from last year. But the crazier part is, and I wonder how much this is what you're talking about, what I'm talking about, the demoralization, how much of it is the pandemic or the jabs or whatever. People look like zombies or angry. Like you're not seeing in what I call like the best times, at least for me, when I was like in college and then after college in New York in the 90s, it was such a thriving place. Everyone was going around. Everyone looked good. Like they were on their way somewhere. It was really the 90s in New York were amazing. And you walk around and you think, what? Where am I? It doesn't even seem like New York. It seems like a foreign country. And then, of course, they've made pot legal here. So it does feel like there's pot every, I mean, the stench outside is pot. There is the smell of the city. And I just feel that the rest of the country has to understand this is what they're doing. And if they did it here, it's coming to your neighborhood. And it is very sad. But I mean, the people look out of it. This is why what you're saying, and when you look back at the Bezmenov or even CCP plans or anything like that, you look and you say, wow, they are taking us out without firing a shot.
I was watching a movie last night called World War Z. My buddy from college wrote it. He wrote the screenplay for it. And it's, you know, I mean, it's like, it's all propaganda. I mean, there's the United Nations is involved and CIA is involved and the World Health Organization is involved. So it's hard to watch it from all that. But the idea of there being zombies, Right. And they're talking about that this part towards the end of the movie. The guy was saying that we intercepted communication from India, and they were talking about zombies, and most people assumed that they were, it was a figure of speech. And he said, I was looking, and the other guy says, I was looking for literal zombies. And it made me think about kind of where we are now. And we're in a world that has a bunch of zombies. And again, sort of on a semi-funny, maybe kind of serious side note, I remember Amazon a couple years ago wrote into their terms of service something about a zombie apocalypse. And everyone's like, oh, that's Amazon just being funny in the legal department. Those wacky lawyers over there. And I was like, really? Are they? Are they being, or is this a joke?
I think why the would CDC you take that step? Had something. I think the CDC had something on their website too about zombie apocalypse. Yeah. And it was like, same thing. Are they just being cheeky?
That's what, you know, you wonder about that. But even if it, you know, let's just assume that they are. Let's just assume that for once they're being funny. I'll tell you what isn't funny is walking around and seeing people that are, if they're not zombies, they're zombie adjacent. Right. They're NPCs. Their brains are turned off.
Right.
Unable to process information. They're only able to interact with you on sort of a binary level. Either they're for this or you're against this. There's no nuance. There's no, I could be for parts of this and against other parts, whatever the situation is. You're either on our side or you're a Nazi, you know, and this right. thing, and it just they keep bouncing from one thing to the next. COVID, lockdowns. And then it bounces to Ukraine. I stand with Ukraine. It's Black Lives Matter. And it feels like programming. And right. so those people are out there. And that's when I say I'm sort of closing in my circle, it's like I've stopped giving energy to them. They're vampires. They may be zombies, but they're definitely vampires. They're energy vampires. They suck the soul and the goodness and the logic and the sanity out of you. That yeah. you just have to get away from these people. The idea that somebody is still trying to tell you that you need to take another booster shot in order to improve your immunity, it and they're saying it unironically, you know, I mean, like we joke about it all the time, but, right. but they're being serious and they're saying just one more shot. It's like, it feels like just one more lottery ticket.
Right. Exactly.
just one more box of M&Ms, you know, just a lot of people that are just have no impulse control or just have completely outsourced their critical thinking to the media or to politicians or to Fauci or to Zelensky or to whoever, you know, you mentioned the homeless crisis in New York. I mean, Bill de Blasio did a infomercial or whatever it was for the right. vaccines where he brought out a cheeseburger and started right. eating it in a very weird way. I don't know why these politicians have a hard time eating or drinking like normal people, but they do. Maybe they're lizards. I don't know. But when he was doing the commercial for this, I was going, wow. Wow. Like, I don't know what's worse, that this got greenlit in through some sort of, you know, channel in his office, or that it's actually going to convince a few people to get vaccinated. There's a couple people out there that are like, well, that cheeseburger sure does look good. Or the laps around Talladega Speedway sure sound appealing if I get the shots or whatever. And you start to think like, oh, we're dealing with like a bifurcation of society where like there's the people that understand what's going on. And then there's a huge population of people that don't get it. And in the Octopus book, I put a quote from Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a neurosurgeon. And he talks about this dumbing down, a chemical, physical dumbing down of society. And he's in, as somebody that's a neurosurgeon, he kind of knows what he's talking about. He says there's a huge malaise of people, like the bulk of people are just sort of down on the reservation, unable to excel at anything. And he said, and they look to and they need the government. And as long as you've got this group that can't excel at anything because they've been dumbed down by, he mentions fluoride and all these other things. He said television. He says if those people you just can't reach. But he says then there's a small percentage of people of above average to higher IQ that are up above the fray. And he says, and they can see the whole picture. it's crystal clear to them what's going on, and they want to like make the other people aware of it. And what he was trying to say was, once you're at this point, you can't reach those people. There's a barrier in their brains. They can't be reached. They're not reachable. And so for that, as we sort of got, you know, we watched a little bit during COVID, then we saw the Black Lives Matter thing. Then we move from agenda to agenda to agenda, and you see the flags and in the Twitter bios change, you start to go, well, these are people. I mean, Mel, I hope they're bots. For their sake, I hope they're not real people, because if they're real people and they have such unoriginal thinking, it's sad and maybe potentially dangerous and just weird on its face. And so that's kind of where we are. There's the people that understand it, and there's a mass of people that'll never figure it out because they just can't.
Well, here's another thing on that level. Of the people that are get it, but get it on a side that this is what's really shocking to me now. So we have the Durham report, not that we didn't know all of that for the last 5 years, but I mean, it's really shocking that our Hillary Clinton at the top of the spear with her husband also never, ever questioned on Epstein in any way, even though he's the easiest to connect and the Clinton Foundation easiest to connect. So forget that. But, you know, all of the people in the White House, Biden, Obama, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, all that, they put on this. And people don't understand. It wasn't about Donald Trump or about that. It was about what they did to the nation in general for all that time, knowingly lying. And that includes the corporate legacy media hacks, knowingly lying. But that came and went out of the news cycle. They're not even talking about it right now. Our country was betrayed at the core. Forget Donald Trump. And like you and I have talked about a million times, I believe the real coup started when they killed JFK, and it's just been crime after crime after crime to keep it going. And here we are now, and yet again, and yet the people that I don't know what they are anymore. I don't know who identifies as either party at this point. I keep saying to people, just sit down for 3 minutes and write what you believe and then look at both parties. And do you agree with, do you feel like you align with either of them in what they're putting out there? Because I don't, and I don't know many people who do. And the two-party system that we're stuck in is one of the biggest problems. But, you know, these educated, I call them poison Ivy Leaguers now, but you and I both went to schools on that level. And I asked for my money back and they won't give it. So I just have to just kind of be in denial. But I'll tell you right now, though, I can't understand not being outraged in general when there's massive crimes committed against me, an American citizen, regardless. So we got the COVID crimes in denial. We got the Durham report in denial. And now we have, it's not just Joe Biden and the DEI army that's calling this country white supremacists and that's the biggest problem. George Soros is saying if you say anything about him, you're now a white supremacist. You and I know that it's coming out of the octopus of global control you talk about from the very highest level. And our country is 64% white. Why isn't that pissing off all of them? So it's just to me, like, I don't understand picking and choosing. Also, the E. Jean Carroll thing was so ridiculous. Now she's suing him again for what he said on the town hall. But it's like, if you have a son, a husband, a brother, you know, a father, and that happened to them, I mean, wouldn't you be outraged? And yet, no, it's so weird that people aren't looking at it on the bigger picture level of the consequences in general.
There's been this push. You're absolutely right. On all that, there's been this push towards trying to demonize everybody and call them names that you know, you're a white supremacist, you're a Nazi, you're a transphobe, you're an anti-Semite, you're whatever it is. There's some sort of derogatory term that they can label you. So let's take the trans thing as an example. Let's say that the trans community comes after me because I've been very critical of their mental illness. And let's say that they come after me and they label me as a transphobe. Okay, so transphobe. Now what?
Right.
Now what do we do? Yeah. You've called me a transphobe. Do I have to leave? Do I get taken to prison? Do I lose all my subscribers? Does nobody buy my book? Because none of those things happen. It's just the label they put on you. So my response to people is let them call you whatever you're a Nazi and a transphobe. Okay, fine. I'm a Nazi and a transphobe. Now what do we do?
Right.
You know, in this idea that like especially on the loony left. And I got my problems with the hardcore right too, but they're so, it's so minor in comparison. It's so minor, but the loony left has this, this ideology that I have no respect for. And I can't connect with it at all. And the especially, you know, within this trans community, they can call you a variety of names, but in actuality, the only person that it should matter to is you. And if you don't have a problem with it, and if it just bounces off of you, then they have no power. So when somebody calls you a transphobe or says you're this or that, the last thing in the world you should ever do is apologize.
Right.
You never apologize for it.
And they always regret it. I know Roseanne to this day, she regrets it so much, but it came so fast and so hard. And I know there's other people too out there that have been canceled or whatever. And at the time were like, I'm so sorry. You know, there, then there's the Dave Chappelle's that are like, bring it. You know, and then just keep fighting through it. But you're right. You know, though, Charlie, we're the same age and we grew up in a time when our parents instilled in us an idea that it only mattered what we thought of ourselves. That, you know, if I was bullied or picked on, it was like, it doesn't matter. Sticks and stones. You know, it doesn't matter. Right. Be the best you can be. All that matters is what you think of yourself and that you're loved and you're a good person and you do the best you can. And it was very much when we were growing up, I felt like it was instilled in us that, you know, as long as you were doing the right thing and being the best you could be and you know, striving to do whatever you want to do and that you were good enough. Now we're at a place where this entire group that you're talking about, this militarized like cult or whatever they are, if you don't say that they are good enough or that they are this, which is why I don't understand the whole pride thing. First of all, pride is one of the seven deadly sins. But why are we proud of who somebody's having a personal, private relationship, sexual relationships with? It made it a whole thing. Now we're going to have a whole month of it. And it's like not pride anymore. It's straight up trans month next month.
Yeah.
And what's scary to me is that they're teaching a whole generation, two generations, that what you think of yourself doesn't matter as much as what everyone else thinks of you.
Yes.
And that has to be compelled by law to some extent. And what scares me, Charlie, and you've talked about this before, I talk about it a lot, is, you know, I look back to at least Mao's China, you know, and a lot of people don't know this, but it is true that when Mao had his revolution, they kind of said, you know, your parents aren't really your parents. You know, Mao is your parent. And I see this same thing happening. I saw the head of Biden's education department put out that like the kids really belong to the state because the teachers spend more time with them. I don't know what planet that's happening on, but certainly not mine. And we've seen a lot of that from Jean-Pierre. They're having a transgender prom on Capitol Hill upcoming that they're helping organize and all of this. And all I keep thinking is, you know, what, you know, this is weird. I've been saying this a lot, but a lot of people talk about all the people that died in the concentration camps and how awful it was. Very few people talk about that millions of people worked there. And what I'm seeing is them creating an army using this transgender, gender fluid, you know, we're your parents now, the state's going to love you, God messed up, put you in the wrong body, your parents sided with them. But here in school, us, the Department of Education, the teachers union and, you know, and the state will now love you and support you. Forget those people and the God and all that. To me, that is how you create an army of Eichmanns, of enforcers.
Yes.
And that's the bigger, scarier part of what's happening right now, I think, to our kids.
You can see this in all of, you're right, all these regimes that did this. Pol Pot did this in Cambodia. Right. And one of the tactics that they have, whether you're in part of the Khmer Rouge or you're in some Liberian army in Africa somewhere, they take the child, the children, and make them either in Mao's Cultural Revolution denounce their parents and bring forth all of the crimes that their parents have committed and out them. In Cambodia, it was similar, but they murdered the parents and they would have the children do it. In Africa, with the child armies and things like that, they have the children kill their parents. Now, it does a number of things. For one, obviously, it traumatizes them, but it bonds them with the state. forever. And also there's another thing that will bond kids to the state is if you sexualize them at a young age, it detaches them from their parents and they look for an attachment elsewhere. And they find that in these groups. They find that at schools. They find that in these leftist organizations that say, you don't need your parents. You can come to us. We can transition you without your parents' knowledge.
Yeah.
We won't tell them. You can have a safe space from them. We'll refer to you with your pronouns at school, and we won't tell your parents about that. I mean, this is grooming behavior, but it's more than just pedophilic grooming behavior. It's teaching them to replace the family with the state. And if you remember in 2021 in the House of Representatives, they passed a new rule that forbid 30 words from being used inside the House, which is weird that you would do this in the middle of a pandemic. It's weird that you would do it anyway. But the words that they banned were not, you know, the N-word or stuff like that. No, they were mother, father, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, all the terms that you would use to describe a family were banned. Okay. So you can't say them. So you have to start if this were a jigsaw puzzle and you were just putting pieces together, pretty soon you would say, well, I don't have all the pieces, but I have a pretty good idea of what we're working with here. And this is a design to create worship of the state.
Yeah.
And remove the family unit. When you remove the terms that are used to describe the family, how many steps away are you from removing the family as a concept altogether? If you can't, it's 1984. The word, right. It's newspeak. The words are getting memory hold and you can't use them anymore. The words like mother, father, brother, sister. And so later, you know, flash forward two generations. Who is that person? You mean my birthing person? The birthing, you know, and you start, the words get, so first they change the words. They change the definition of words, whether that be what vaccination is, herd immunity or whatever. Then they start banning words, which the left loves to do. And you start to, and then they destabilize you and get you into thinking that you're born in the wrong body. I mean,
yeah.
What a diabolical trick to do that to children and to have that reinforcement from the teachers, these right. woke Marxist teachers. And then to have the My Two Mommies book, you go to the library, it's there. You go to watch you go to a play, it's there. We're going to have someone come in for a story hour. And it's a 6'8" tranny who's reading to you with a prosthetic purple dick. And you're just like, well, I mean, it's like, it's everywhere. It's 360 degrees of this. And so for children that are growing up in this environment, like, you have to be a parent that's present. You have to be like paying attention to this, because if you're not, your kid could fall into this trap. You could get a little bit older, get into their adolescent ages and start to sort of, you know, already kind of disassociate a little bit from the parents, like, oh, dad, you're a dork, you know, and I want to hang out with my friends, and that's all normal. But then it becomes like, I don't want to even see you. I don't ever want you're a Nazi. Your dad's a
fascist.
Nazi.
Yeah.
You know, because of this and that, and they supported this and come tell us how many guns do your parents have at home?
Right,
you know, we're doing a questionnaire. How many guns do your parents have? It's like, oh my God, like, it's incremental. It's what David Icke talks about, the totalitarian tiptoe. You know, you don't go A to Z all at once. You make these little incremental marks. You have Tom DeLay in a C-SPAN interview in 2016 talking about how he sat in on the meetings in which they talked about normalizing 12 perversions, including bestiality and pedophilia.
Right.
And so you start to, you go, okay, well, that's a piece. And you start to put this together and you go, well, I don't know about you guys, but this is showing me something, a direction that this country's going that I'm not I have no interest in participating in. And it's limited to us. It's Western countries, right? This nonsense isn't happening in Africa. It's not happening in India. It's not happening in Bangladesh. They got other things to worry about. Like, we're so content that we have to start creating problems. Like, maybe I was born in the wrong body. No, maybe you just don't have any friends because you're a tremendous dork, but you'll grow out of that at some point, right. And you'll be more sociable and things will happen. Right now, you don't have a whole lot of friends, but that doesn't mean you were born in the wrong body. You're just, So we're getting, it's a dangerous slope, and it's being normalized. And on top of that, as you rightly pointed out, anybody that speaks out about it, just like, not even like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Just people that raise their hand and say, you know, I have a question.
Right.
Who asked you, aren't you guys supposed to be teaching my kid about math? Why is nobody in Chicago or Baltimore graduating that's able to fulfill the math or verbal requirements? Nobody can do that. But everybody knows about transgender people because they keep coming into the school. Why is that? What are the, right. What's the priorities here? And so it's not accidental. It's part of the agenda. It's being rolled out. It's obvious to people paying attention, but I think the sad thing is, Mel, I think you and I both know there's a lot of people that aren't paying attention
and that don't care or don't know or aren't paying attention, like you said. But here's another thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because I did want to say this. You know, we're at a place, I've been looking into this, both the medical schools and law schools are doing away with the MCAT and the LSAT. Okay. But it appears, if you read both of their plans, they're only doing away with it for everyone but white people. I don't really see how that's working there, but it that's what it looks like. But and with both, you know, in medical school, you have to pass certain tests to keep going forward. Now they're going to turn them into pass fail, and it's very subjective. They are also going to with everything at this point. The diversity, equity, inclusion is across the board. So that means everything. That's including engineers, you know, military, obviously doctors, lawyers, all of that. So it's what they're doing to our kids, they're actually doing on a grander scale to all institutions. Joe Biden put out an executive order of all of government is what they call it. But basically DEI and this Justice 40 program and all of this, where diversity, equity, inclusion, hiring trumps qualifications, experience, all of that. So at this point, by the time these people are done with this, every single field will be soldiers, in my opinion. And that's that's where we're headed. And the American people that aren't paying attention will be paying for it. I also believe that a lot of these people that have not been affected by this yet will be, and will be soon. I feel very nervous about the summer, but when we're talking about the children, now they're going to grad school and government agencies. So, you know, I feel like there should be more people that are standing up. And yet, like you're saying, it doesn't seem that way, but at some point they will feel the pain of a very dumbed down, unqualified, you know, people, if you're going to get your, you know, the doctor, you don't know if this doctor belongs there. In the past we did. And so,
discount,
you know, for that
brain
next
surgery.
Level, what's that? You know?
Yeah. If you have to get the tumor in your brain removed, get it removed now and not when the next generation comes in to becoming doctors, because the ones that pass the true false medical entrance exams, those are not going to be your friends. The ones that are like, well, we got to have a certain, hey, what color are you? You can have a certain number of people that they're your shade. Let me get the, you know, like the hold up, like the paint selection to like put it right next to it. Yeah, you look mocha enough. Come on in. You're going to be a brain surgeon now. Who cares what your scores are? The testing is racist.
I know. And medical schools and law schools, both, if you look at the ABA or the AMA and you look at them, you'll see that there's like a whole year of, anti-racism classes and, you know, newspeak classes and how to deal with race and systematic racism and all of that. If I'm a Black person, I'm really offended by all of this BS.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's so offensive. I know some are. There's not the biggest voices in the Black community are always the same people that have been, you know, race baiting and making money off of it. I always tell people everyone on the Black Congressional Caucus is a millionaire and they've been there forever. You know, like it's not by accident, but
I always
really insulting to the Black community, in my opinion.
For sure. Who was at the Jordan Neely rally this week or the funeral this week? Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton, of course, federal informant rat Al Sharpton. You know, I asked this question before. Al Sharpton is always leading these marches. For 40 years, he's been leading these marches. Are they just walking in a huge circle? Because they haven't gotten anywhere. I mean, Al Sharpton has become a multimillionaire that flies private jets, a race hustler of the highest order, but he hasn't accomplished anything for the Black community.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Black community is fine, but again, that's his job. It's to just divert and to get the Black community marked. Yeah, if I were a Black person, I would want to be judged on my own merit.
Yeah, I mean, we were there, you know. Like, what's crazy is when we went to high school, I felt like it was like my high school. I grew up outside of Philly, and I'll tell you, it was everything. Like I believe that my valedictorian was like gay, and like the second person in the class was a Black girl. Like, nobody thought like, wow, you know, they needed extra help. No, they were the smartest people. worked the hardest, you know, and they deserved it. You know, now it's like, you know, we have to kind of do what it's really pathetic. I just wish more people were doing something about it. You brought up Al Sharpton and the money. I'm actually doing an event in Grand Rapids with this great family, the Smiths, and they have a church up there. And we're doing a Juneteenth event that I'm speaking at about where the Black Lives Matter money went and why the Black community should be demanding that Black Congressional Caucus that's all in bed with the CCP and the globalists find out where the $100 million, probably several billion dollars went for Black Lives Matter, because it went to Act Blue, first of all, to elect Joe Biden, who's done nothing for that community. And it's not gone into the Black community at all. So, you know, now they want reparations. Do they think that that's going to go to them too? Because it's not, you know, and again, this is what it is. It's a constant cycle of deception on such a grand scale. I just wish that we could find a way to mobilize people to see that we, the people of the United States, will, if we do not stand up, have this one party that they're marching towards. And that one party will not be an American party. It'll be a globalist run party.
I can't believe that the Black community would vote for Joe Biden.
Me neither.
Given his track record of being an overt racist,
right,
being Strom Thurmond's best friend, for creating the private prison industry with George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton and that group. He put more Black people in prison on disproportionately long sentences for crack cocaine as opposed to powder cocaine than just about anybody. And yet his son is a crack smoking fiend, which is ironic and hilarious all rolled into one. And yet the Black community looks at Joe Biden and they allow him to just continue to lie to them. Right. About all the things. Oh, you know, I grew up in a Black neighborhood. I grew up in a, what is he says all these things. I grew up in a Romanian neighborhood. Whoever he's talking to. Oh, I grew up in a Turkish neighborhood.
Right.
I mean, the guy's pathological liar.
Yeah.
In the Black community, listen, the Black community has been treated like garbage by the establishment for a long, long, long time. They should rightly hate both parties.
But
they don't. They still are still falling into this. Well, the Democrats are looking out for you. The Democrats are not looking out for you. The Republicans aren't looking out for you either. But at least they don't pretend to. The Democrats pretend to look out for the Black community. Black community falls into this trap over and over again. And then and they get nowhere and they go, I can't believe what happened. How long are you going to play this game?
Yeah.
Where you pretend like you don't know what's happening. It's obvious you're following the wrong group of people. They hate you. The Democratic Party hates your guts. They only tell you what they have to tell you to get you to vote for them. And then the minute they're in office, they don't help you at all.
Nope.
Don't you recognize that? Can't you see that? But that's, they're sitting around waiting for someone to save you. You know, there's a mentality to that. And it's not just limited to the Black community either. It's limited. It's the people that give up and exchange their ingenuity and their intentions and their energy for freebies, handouts from the government. And you get used to that system and you become a house pet.
Yeah. And something else that Joe Biden put in there, this executive order. It's not Joe Biden, by the way. My audience knows that. Your audience knows that. This is a globalist. Our country has been, I believe, totally captured by a bunch of oligarch billionaires. But besides that, he put in a whole government bill for voting, where basically if you get anything from the government, and it's like, you know, from unemployment to Medicaid to welfare to any of that, which, again, most people don't know that only, I think, 52% of Americans pay taxes at all because of those programs. But Basically, within all of your checks or anything that comes to you is a whole bunch of straight up propaganda to vote Democrat to keep it going. So it's like a whole of government, you know, informing people about this and that. But when you get it in the mail, because New York's trying to hand out money to everyone, that I get stuff I don't qualify for in the mailers, and you open it and there's like a whole thing. It's like a push to vote for Democrat to keep it going through federal agencies that are giving handouts and giving welfare or giving, you know, any of the programs that they've set up. And you're thinking, how can this be possible that they're conflating A and B? But they are. And there's a lot of people that are led to believe that, you know, any of that will end if they don't continue to vote Democrat. And it's such a deception and a fraud. And now the big thing they bring up is everything is a MAGA Republican, MAGA Republicans or Republicans. And it's like, there's no such thing at this point. Just stop with all the rhetoric, the division. And, you know, here we find ourselves at a place where, I lost him. Okay, here we go. So now we're at a place where I need to jump to your original book, which everyone I'm sure that watches me has it. If you don't, you should get it for a reference. It's not going to go out of date anytime soon. The Octopus of Global Control. Bilderberg was this week. I always laugh because every time I look at it and Stacey Abrams is number one because of the alphabetical order, I just think, God, our country is in real trouble. But Bilderberg was this week, and quite a few people on there that should terrify everyone in America, like Eric Schmidt and a bunch of Avril Haines, all these people. Will you tell my audience what Bilderberg is and why it should matter?
Yeah, Bilderberg is a meeting that was started back in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands and these globalist people had an idea to get together and sort of talk about the direction that they wanted to take the world. They brought in academics, leading political figures, royalty, industry leaders, people that, you know, people that made a difference in the world, people that had an oversized influence in the world. They'd be brought in and they would discuss where they want to take things. And that is something that, you know, we see these days with the World Economic Forum and groups like that. And so it's been relatively normalized, but for many, many years, it was under the radar and nobody talked about it. And this is what these guys got together and talked about, how they were going to drive society. And of course, their underlying goal is that they are the ones that will be driving this car, and that because, you know, they're the only ones fit to rule, fit to lead. You know, everyone else is just too dumb. So they're going to do all of that. And the main goal is that they want to get to a position where they have global government would be the ideal situation for them, but they'll settle for global governance, which is to say that we don't necessarily need to lock all the countries into one big country. As long as we can get all the countries to do the same thing, that'll work too. So it's an idea of let's set an outline for how we're going to all behave. And it might not be every single country represented, but it's the big ones, the ones that drive, you know, that have the majority of the money and the majority of the influence. And we'll say, all right, well, you know, who's going to be, you know, where do we want to go for the next couple of years? What's important to us? So as we move into the current version of Bilderberg, you start to have topics that get discussed, like artificial intelligence, central bank digital currencies, the role of health security. They'll use really broad terms like that, and how we respond to a changing world of pandemics. And very kind of vague, you know, terms, and you go, oh, they're getting together to solve pandemics, and you go, not really. They're getting together to create them,
Right. Right. And this is what they do. And Bilderbergs ran under the radar. I mean, you've been reporting on it for a long time, but the truth is that we should be looking at all of this, because what did happen over the last few years, as people started to learn more about what, you know, you've been talking about, what David Icke, what all these people have been talking about, is a lot of emphasis was put on the World Economic Forum. And people were really looking at the World Economic Forum and not realizing that that same group of people are connected to all, as your book lays out perfectly, to all of these groups. Bilderberg, to me, I guess it was like Kissinger's 100th birthday anniversary. But I mean, people have to understand that you have a lot of quotes in your book that are really good. But there's one by David Rockefeller, who's one of the big architects of all of this stuff, who says that a banking, you know, intellectual elite class is far superior to autodetermination by the people. I believe it's one of his big quotes that he put out there. And, you know, if they think that we're creating a one world order, you know, I'm guilty of that. So, you know, it's not conspiracy theory. They got away with that for a very long time saying that. But now we're at a place where they don't even care that we know. And and there's such a small number of them, but that this even made it to the news. And now The Guardian put out, who is part of the controlled media, but put out an article, I believe, because they had to, you know, not because they wanted to, but because they had to. And then it looks like they're really digging in this Guardian article. But no, they're just acknowledging that it's real. And, you know, that it's fine. They're just there to help us. You know, you see Noah Harari, you know, wasn't on the list, but then was caught walking out of a meeting. So, you know that it's the same people, you know, it's the same plan. And this is where I get to on a world scale, because you deal with a lot of international people, too, geopolitical analysts, as I do as well. We all know this. And so at this point, there's a very small group of these people in terms of the masses. And I believe, as you believe, or had said last time, that they are failing at their great reset, but they are also accelerating the plan as fast as they can via NATO and this ridiculous push to World War III. They are pushing it with open borders, not just here. I hope people know that that's not just in America, that is all over the place. And and a bunch of other things that they're pushing now. So, and the World Health Assembly is this week. So we have Tedros out there, who works for the CCP, and Bill Gates, announcing that we need global governance in healthcare. So as much as we know about it and we're talking about it, and there's probably millions of people. I saw Jimmy Dore was added to the kill list for Ukraine today.
Must be so proud.
He should be proud. But I have to say, like, at this point, you know, maybe just the people that are aware should be doing something about it. I don't know.
Well, the idea that, so Bilderberg, World Economic Forum, all these groups, you're right, that they feel like they're on a schedule that has been pushed up a little bit. And I actually would prefer that over them still being on a longer timeline. And the reason is because I think that when they're on an accelerated timeline, it's because things aren't going well and there's some sort of pressure. And if you get them to move faster than they're supposed to, then I feel like there's a chance for them to make mistakes. And there's mistakes have been made, to borrow a term from Donald Rumsfeld, but mistakes really have been made with regard to the COVID rollout, with regard to Ukraine, all these things that my assumption is that they envisioned them going a lot smoother than they went. They assumed that maybe everybody would line up and get vaccinated and there would be no pushback and nobody would ever challenge them and they would drive the whole thing and no one would ever figure it out. Right. I mean, they had, I know for a fact that they war gamed that scenario not working because we got the SPARS pandemic document, which shows that the wheels fall off towards the very end. So COVID didn't go according to plan. Ukraine, that didn't go according to plan either. They've been building up that army for 7 years now, trying to make sure that it's ready. And they wanted to go, you know, Russia into this war and like, okay, we're going to take care of Russia. We're going to slap all these sanctions. It's not working well. So though I am frustrated and annoyed and sad that they are continuing to do these things that have real world impacts for actual human beings, I'm not on, you know, the Ukraine Russia thing. My sympathy is for the people, the people that are stuck in the middle that don't want any part of this. I don't want any, I don't, I don't want them hurt. I don't want the COVID people hurt. I don't even want the normies to have their brains broken by the COVID stuff.
They're using people at the border. Somebody got mad because I said that there's a zombie apocalypse in New York City. And they're like, oh, that somebody with God would say that, you know, be mean to the less fortunate. It is not humane what is happening at the border. The cartel owns these people and they're being sent in here to vote for the Democrats. A lot of them have court dates in 2025. You know, 2027.
Venezuela opened their prisons, their insane asylums and their prisons and took all the people and sent them to the border. Now, of course, if I'm Venezuela, I'd have done the same thing.
And it's considering not just how much
America has been undermining them. I'd be like, oh, well, here's a perfect opportunity. You want to infiltrate us? Well, we got some infiltration for you. So I don't even blame these countries. And I'll tell you what, the migrant people that are on this march, though it is obviously organized, and though it's again, we destabilize their homelands by screwing with them on our foreign policy and doing the things that we do. And we create a situation where these human beings are being used as political pawns. And I always find that to be disgusting, but it's an agenda. You mentioned open borders in America. You mentioned open borders, not just being limited to America. Correct. Trilateral Commission hates borders. They hate national sovereignty. These globalist people talk about national sovereignty. Yeah, it was an experiment that we tried for a few thousand years, but ultimately it'll fail. It's not really where you want to go. And you go, well, why would you want? Why is that your ideology? What are you trying to do? And what they're trying to do is they're saying, well, we need international sovereignty. We'll just wrap you all up into one group and we'll have a world army. You know, we'll have a world army. And you go, okay, great. So who does the world army play every Sunday? Who do they play? Who, if you're in a world army, are we fighting other worlds? Or no, it's the people.
Right. Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. And that is, in my opinion, NATO. We are also, this is because you're not left or right. You've always been pretty neutral, just trying to figure it out. So I'm going to jump to now because I don't want to talk to people that are in either camp. The situation with Donald Trump is totally out of control. You know, I mean, I just got to say, I don't care if you love him or you hate him or whatever. You have to be honest. The persecution of Donald Trump, the lawfare, this Jack Smith is going to go after him for things that they admit every single president did. We still don't know about Hillary's server. We never got any answers about that. We got Joe Biden with boxes of stuff everywhere from when he was vice president. Apparently, this Jack Smith is going to come in another special counsel, even after we found out the whole Durham thing was all BS. And like you said about the rushing of the great resetters, they rushed after Hillary Clinton lost. And I think that a lot of the mistakes that they made that have come through in the Durham report were because they were panicking. They didn't realize that Trump actually was going to win, I don't think, until that day. And they made a lot of mistakes along the way that had they planned, it wouldn't have probably come to pass. But, you know, here we are at a point where they're going to go after Donald Trump multiple more times, I believe.
Yep.
And I just can't believe, I don't care if you hate him, honestly. I can't believe just human beings in general wouldn't look at this situation and find it absolutely disgusting. What's your take on this Donald Trump thing? Because he keeps trying to punch back from his, where he can on Truth Social to his few million people over there. But I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I can't even imagine that this is America and that this is going on, and it's not even close to done.
The E. Jean Carroll debacle was one of those things where I wanted to just grab normal people and just say, just like force them, just watch this. I want you to understand this story. I want you to understand that a lady can close. You and I've talked about this before. You've been in that department store.
You have to open it with a key. And there's a stacker right there because it's the most expensive store in the world.
Nothing's happening here. And I'm with you. Donald Trump, personality-wise, as a human being, didn't really care for him back in the Apprentice days. I just don't like that, like, you know, hotshot type of guy.
Right.
But political, like what they're doing to him is reprehensible. It's disgusting because but again, it's a sign that they fear him. And they wouldn't go after him this bad if they didn't really fear him, because he has the thing that they want. He has the trust of a large segment of the population. There's a lot of people that will do what he says because they see him as being a persecuted figure, which he is. He is a persecuted figure. Now, he is not some saint. He's not above reproach. He's done a lot of things I didn't like when he was in office, like Operation Warp Speed and the like. But it is undeniable that he is being persecuted for ridiculous stuff. Again, you have a lady accusing him of raping her, and she can't, which I would assume would be the most traumatizing aspect of your life. I would assume that. I mean, not in her life, because
I know many rape victims. It is absolutely something you don't forget the date.
You don't go on Anderson Cooper and joke about how it's hot.
Right.
Either. You don't do those things. You don't do that. But it would be burned into your memory. Oh, it happened on this date in this place. I remember it was 1:32 in the afternoon because I was thinking this is the longest 2 minutes of my life or whatever. Right. None of that. She's like, well, it happened about this time. Well, when? Well, in this year. When did the man rape you? Well, it could have been that. No, not could have been. You're supposed to know this stuff. It happened to you. Well, it might have been, you know. It's like you hear all this and you go, this is garbage. And they're like, convicted. You're like, okay.
And then you have people, especially there's still New York ilk of people that maybe you're, I don't know what's wrong with them, but that were so excited. We had two people down the street that we know, you know, a Columbia MBA working at a big bank. And they were like, oh, thank God he was convicted. And we're like, what? How can you think that that's OK? What if it was your brother or your father?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't convicted of rape, actually. Convicted.
They manipulated it because the judge said it could have been a kiss on the cheek that was unwanted. Well, how do you judge that? Meanwhile, he's 6'2" and owned the Plaza at the time, right across the street from Bergdorf Goodman. And it was in the women's section of the most expensive store in New York City. You know, and nobody knew, nobody saw, nobody knew. I mean, it's just, it's so ridiculous.
So the horny guy that owns the Miss Universe pageant decided to hit on some 50-year-old broad in an assault and rape her I mean, none of it makes any sense. And I'm no Trump fan.
And Reid Hoffman paid for it, which wasn't allowed to come in, which is terrible since he's in part of the entire, all the left NGOs. You find his name there. The 10 oligarchs, I think, run this country. He's up there hanging with them in the World Economic Forum. And on top of that, though, the other thing is the end of law and order and Department of Justice and all of that. Now, it's my belief what you're saying right now, though, does make him stronger. They are going to try to put him in prison. And I have seen both Ty Cobb and Bill Barr seem very behind this, them putting him in prison for things that, you know, I don't think are prison worthy. But I honestly believe that most people, because people like you are out there too, but, you know, you hear like the Tim Pools and the Joe Rogans and these people being like, well, if they fear him so much and he's going to go in there and tear it apart and get, you know, and bring it all out. Well, you know what? Maybe that's what we need. So I think it's backfiring on that level.
I listen, if he became the president again, holy moly, could you imagine? Cause he's disruptive to their grift. And I think they count on consistency in there. And they could, you know, you could have a guy like, What is he, if he gets in for a second term, a final term, and he has nothing left to lose and he's towards the end of his life and he can't run again and he's gone through what he's gone through with these people for the last 4 years and everything, he could be the type of guy that could be very dangerous in a good way.
Them. Dangerous to them. I think he could be very good for us because I've talked to some people that I know will be on in his cabinet. An inner circle, if that happens, and they're going to go in there and they are going, God willing, I hope that this happens. They're going to tear it apart. And they're going to reveal a lot of stuff. But I also believe they're going to pull out of the UN and pull out of the globalist stuff and pull out of all of these globalist organizations and do a lot of things like that I think are necessary. The one big thing I think a lot of people don't know that you talk about a lot is I think the thing that they hated the most, and I think this was with JFK too, if you really dig into that story, and I know this from General Flynn himself, is that they wanted to know where the money went, all the Pentagon money, all the Black Ops money, all of that. I believe that's also getting in the way of that, how JFK was going to put the CIA under the Joint Chiefs, which means he would control it, was a major problem then too. So for me, whatever happens, whoever goes in there in 24, if they, I don't even know if we're going to have an election. I have to be honest. I don't know what's going to happen, but I would like to see that happen. I would like a full audit of our Department of Defense, our Pentagon. But you're the one that's talked a lot about Rumsfeld the day before 9/11 is saying that they're missing trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's, and I think, the thing that they were scared of the most was him disrupting their black budgets and black ops, because apparently one of Trump's plans, if he had been able to do what he was going to do on the military side, was to do an audit of the Pentagon. And I really do think we need that, those kind of things. I don't know if he's the, I don't know if RFK Jr., I don't know if whoever, if people, somebody that hasn't even shown up yet. But I really do think that we need to, like, I think it was Julian Assange that said, like, you know, like a huge number of people in our government would be in jail. I don't think that's ever going to happen. But I do think that we could dismantle a whole bunch of government agencies and really get them down to bare bones and kind of look at what we have under the hood would be a great thing.
Well, the FASB 56 accounting laws that changed over the last couple of years blacked out all of those accounting ledgers. You can't, they're redacted like classified documents now. So when Catherine Austin Fitz and Professor Mark Skidmore discovered the $21 trillion that was missing off of the DOD and HUD's books, then they started making noise about that. And they said, well, this is only two of 17 agencies that we've looked at. We haven't even had a chance to get to the other ones yet. And before they had a chance, they changed the accounting laws and blacked everything out. So there's, you know, there's trillions of dollars, maybe more than likely 100 trillion plus dollars that has just gone missing. So where is it going? There's different thoughts onto as what it would be used for. But listen, if you stole $100 trillion, you would have every reason to protect people from knowing about that. And it takes me back to a quote that Daniel Inouye talked about. And I put this in the Octopus book too, this politician from Hawaii. He said, there is another government beyond our government that has its own funding mechanisms and military.
Right.
And then you've got a quote from Bill Clinton saying, there is an invisible government. There's another government that I don't control.
Right. Right.
And that is what you're talking about. This, that's what, the, you know, when they go after these, when Trump talks about, I want to do a full audit and things like that, that's when this group says, the hell you will.
Right.
Like, we'll blow your plane up before we allow you to audit where our money has gone. So again, Trump part two would be, boy, wouldn't that be a crazy movie to watch? But but only if he were to show us that he was serious by not bringing in the equivalent of the John Boltons of the world to come in and start running policy and things like that. When you run on a platform of, I'm going to drain the swamp, and then your first hire is John Bolton, you're not draining anything.
It was a mess. A lot of people around him were a mess. And I've learned over time, a lot of these people were against Trump the whole time. He, people say, oh, he's so smart, this and that. I am telling you right now that he was deceived by a lot of people, and he picked a lot of people that were put there on purpose to, you know, he couldn't do anything because of Paul Ryan. Look, I, whatever happens with that, I worry every single day that if they can't stop him, they'll take him out. And that they haven't so far with what we know of history. People think they just took out JFK. And Lincoln. No. Lots and lots of people.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of presidents that we think, they tried to take out Reagan, you know, but I do think that, you know, I've been talking a lot about we need an AA, Americans Anonymous program. And like, we have to definitely do the fourth step, which is like a fearless moral inventory, and that America is sick as its secrets. So the thing that I would like is full transparency on some of this stuff. And that's what I hope for. But whatever the case may be, it is going to be a wild ride because they are not giving up. Last thing, we know that this morning, a white supremacist who happens to be Middle Eastern drove his U-Haul into the White House and then had a Nazi flag. Don't know where he got that. That's weird. And then we have this ammonium nitrate missing and all of this. I mean, these people aren't messing around. I think we're going to have a wild summer. So everyone should really pay attention. But Charlie, what are your thoughts about upcoming and what people should actually be paying attention to?
Well, I have a nice little side business that I started. I didn't tell anyone about it, but I've been quietly making Nazi flags and selling them to the feds. I've been doing really well, making a lot of money. I'm planning on retiring pretty soon.
I'm sure.
Yeah, the guy that drove the U-Haul was the only thing missing would have been if Patriot Front was all in the back of it, you know,
yeah,
like
exactly.
that they rolled up. They're like, hey, it's all you Nazis here. And they started marching and goose stepping and getting arrested and not pulling their masks down. You know how when cops arrest people that have masks, how they let them keep their masks on. That's totally normal. Right. Wink, wink. Yeah. They want white supremacy, domestic terrorism to be the most scary thing in the world as badly as they can. You have Biden talking about it last week. You have Mayorkas talking about it as well. The number one threat to our safety and security is domestic terrorism from white supremacists. It's like you guys put out a list like 3 years ago and it wasn't even in the top 25. What are you talking about? It's a non-factor. I'm as white as they come. Nobody's recruited me. I frankly, I'm a bit offended. I've got the shaved head and everything.
I've never even met one is the craziest.
No, it's very
like me all that much, but I've never met one in my life and I've lived all over the place. I got to tell you.
No, there's a supply and demand imbalance. There is a huge demand on the government side for white domestic terrorism caused by white supremacists, but there's a supply side issue. There's just not enough of it. That's why they have to go get Middle Eastern people and Nazi flags and go see this guy's a white supremacist. It's like the guy is Indian or something. The guy is not.
This is the second one. I can't tell if he's Indian or Middle Eastern, but the last guy was Mexico. I was, I think, from Honduras or somewhere. And they keep saying you've seen them because The View, the Witch's Coven, I call it. They were like, well, you don't need to be white to be a white supremacist. You do.
Yeah, you do. Actually, no. But again, perfect encapsulation of the left's psychosis. You don't need to be white to be a white supremacist.
Right.
Men can get pregnant. You don't need to be white to be a white supremacist. I mean, it's backwards thinking. It's 2 + 2 = 5. And again, if they can get you to believe these crazy things, they've captured you.
Yeah.
Your mind is theirs.
That's it. Here, look, it's my reference book next to my desk. You think I'm kidding? And I pull it out to look at stuff all the time. This is Charlie's book. Please get it if you haven't gotten it already.
When you go and see Frank at Quite Frankly, you tell him that I showed you this book. This is Shoeless Joe Jackson, Shoeless Joe. And Frank and I are in June. I'm doing book club with him. So
I love Frank's book club. Cool.
For 4 Thursdays in the month of June, and I are going to be going through this book, Shoeless Joe. So,
that's awesome. I love that book club. I'm so excited. look, and you said the circle gets smaller. There is a circle of people, I believe, and you're one of them, that is really, really doing amazing, great work, far better than any mainstream media could ever hope to be doing. I think Tucker left a void, but there's a lot of great people out there, and you are definitely one of them. I am so grateful to be your friend, to know you, for your voice.
Likewise.
And please tell my audience where to find you, because I'll tell you, in terms of keeping your head on straight and really putting out facts and truth with compassion and empathy and kindness and generosity, you really are the top of the game. So please tell my audience where to find you.
I appreciate that, Mel. Thanks for having me on every time.
I love it.
And I always know when our episode goes up because your audience is very interactive with me, and I appreciate that. Macroaggressions, the podcast, goes out twice a week in audio format wherever podcasts are served. The Sunday show is an interview. The Wednesday show is a monologue. This last Sunday, I had Monica Perez on an episode called The Old World Order, where we talked about the Milner-Fabian conspiracy of the early 1900s and what led to from the round tables. What led into the creation of the Democratic Socialists, which became the Labour Party of the UK. So we had a really good conversation about that. In audio format, you can get Macroaggressions anywhere. In video format, Rockfin's a good place to start. You can find me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast. And the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, named after the book. And the books are available on Amazon and also in digital format at the website as well. So thanks for having me again, as always.
Thanks, Charlie Robinson.
You're in the circle too.
Once in a while, I show up on your great show, Union of the Unwanted. I still believe that the people that you pull into that show are the people that should be having a tour around this country and pulling everyone in. Because I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people that now realize that there are no sides. And that the only side is basically we the people saving ourselves. Thank you so much, Charlie Robinson. You are always a total pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Patriot pals. So happy that you're looking into gold and silver and protecting your savings for whatever comes ahead. Beverly Hills Precious Metals is our good friend, and we've been working with them for a long time. So you'll be getting a call from them. We'll also follow up here at the Mel Kay Show because we want to make sure that you're taken care of and you're protected. If you have any questions, please let us know. Right now is the time. There's so much information coming. There's so much chaos. We just want all the patriots out there to be sure that they are protected, they are moving forward, and that we get through the storm together and safe. Whatever may come, just know we, the people of the United States, will prevail. God wins, and protect yourself. And please get in touch with us if you have any questions. So Beverly Hills Precious Metals, they're the best. They'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. You be in touch with us. Let's do this together.